Coming up on Philosophy Talk, philosophy through humor.
Secretary, doctor, there's an invisible man in the waiting room. Doctor, tell him I can't see him.
Forget your troubles and just get happy. You better chase all your cares away.
Two cows are standing in the pasture. One turns to the other and says, although pi is usually abbreviated to five numbers, it actually goes on to infinity. The second cow turns to the first and says, moo.
Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. We're going to the promised land.
Salesman, ma'am, this vacuum cleaner will cut your work in half. Customer, terrific. Give me two of them.
It's Passover, and a Jewish guy is eating his lunch in the park. A blind man sits down next to him, so the Jewish guy offers him some of his lunch, a piece of matzah. The blind man takes it, fingers it for a moment, and says, who writes this crap?
Forget your troubles and just get happy.
Philosophy through humor, coming up after the news. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the studios of Oregon Public Broadcasting in Portland.
Continuing conversations that begin on Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus.
Today our topic is philosophy through humor. Joining us soon will be the authors of a new book, Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar. Now, the premise of this book, John, is that there's a strong connection between philosophy and humor. They say, in fact, that a philosophical concept works its payoff in exactly the same way that a joke achieves its payoff. What do you think about that initially?
Well, I'm not sure what I think about it, but I know what I hope about it. I hope that it's right, because my experience is every quarter, at the end of the quarter, I collect the student evaluations, and I'm praying that they're going to say, this guy is so bright, this guy is so brilliant, this guy knows philosophy so well, he is so illuminating. And what they always say is, he's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So if I could convince myself that humor and philosophy are pretty much the same thing, then I could say, well, I'm doing my job. What more do they want?
Well, you are very funny, John. But now, do you think they're laughing at you, laughing at your jokes, or they're laughing because philosophy just makes them laugh? I mean, what do you think?
Well, probably some combination, but it's partly the latter. It's partly philosophy. Take the philosophical problem of other minds. How do we know that other people have minds when we can just observe their behavior? Now, when you explain that to freshmen for the first time and you give them an example, how do you know your roommate has a mind? How do you know your mother has a mind? How do you know your sixth grade teacher has a mind? They often laugh. They think the whole idea of thinking about that, of worrying about that, of coming up with reasons for it is just kind of funny.
Well, they don't think we could possibly be serious or something. Or take Zeno's paradox. It's the same kind of thing. You tell somebody, look, you're going to walk across the room, but before you walk all the way across, you have to walk halfway across, and that's going to take some time. Before you have to walk halfway across, you have to walk halfway to halfway across, and that's going to take some time. And before you walk halfway to halfway across, you got to walk halfway to halfway, halfway across. And wait a minute, there's an infinite number of steps. You're never going to do it in a finite time. You know, maybe, is that serious?
Well, it's pretty funny. Some philosophy problems are sort of funny. We'll grant that. But how about the other way? Are there some jokes that are kind of intrinsically or deeply philosophical?
Well, try this one. Why is an elephant big, gray, and wrinkled?
I give up, Ken. Why?
Well, John, if he was small, white, and round, he'd be an aspirin.
Bada boom, bada bing. A real thigh slapper, Ken. That joke is funny. Let's grant that. And why is it funny? Well, here's my theory. It's funny because it offers one sort of explanation for why elephants are the way they are when we expected another. You expect to be told why elephant lives, why elephant evolution, what it is about elephant DNA makes them big and wrinkled. And instead, you're told something really about words, that elephant stands for the big wrinkly things and aspirin for the small white round pills.
You know, I think you're onto something. See, here's the similarity, at least one, between jokes and philosophy. You start out with some obvious premises in a philosophy argument, and you end up with some startling, surprising conclusion that you would have never thought of. Same way with a joke. You start out with some obvious starting point, right? Elephants are big, gray, and round, and you end up with this surprising conclusion. It's very, very similar.
Well, I guess so. Surprising conclusions one way or another. At least there do seem to be a lot of connections between philosophy and humor. They both encourage you to step back, consider some of your preconceptions and maybe be a little lighthearted about it.
You know, our roving philosophical reporter, Zoe Cornelli, tried her hand at connecting philosophy and humor. She files this report.
I took a close look at the world of comedy, trying to find any trace of something philosophical. To my surprise, philosophy started popping up everywhere. Back in 1956, comedian Eddie Lawrence made a hit with his character, The Old Philosopher. The immensely popular routine was followed by a sequel, aptly titled The New Philosopher.
Hey there, cousin. You say you got shot in a duel over an ugly woman, and your oldest boy wants to be a jockey, and he's 36 and weighs over 200 pounds. And your stretch socks are disappearing into your shoes. And you just sat on your eyeglasses and got off at the wrong stop, and all your dimes and tokens have been falling out of a hole in your change pocket. And you just bit your tongue. And your wife ain't come home from the movies yet. Does that seem to upset you, old-timer?
Well, lift your head up high and take a walk in.
Come to think of it, The Old Philosopher isn't really all that philosophical. Okay, so we're still looking for philosophy in humor. Next, I turned to Woody Allen. He sounded promising, having almost majored in metaphysics, or so he claims.
I was thrown out of NYU my freshman year for cheating on my metaphysics final. You know, I looked within the soul of the boy sitting next to me.
Upon deeper exploration, I found Allen's humor reflects a clear philosophical bent.
What would Socrates say? All those Greeks were homosexuals. A, Socrates is a man. B, all men are mortal. C, all men are Socrates. That means all men are homosexuals.
Amid Woody Allen's usual body humor, you can find deep speculations on the nature of fate and the human condition.
If it turns out that there is a God, I don't think that he's evil. I think that the worst you can say about him is that basically he's an underachiever.
Now I'm on a roll. Why stop with Woody Allen? If you pay attention, you realize lots of popular comedy routines are basically philosophy lessons in disguise. Take Monty Python, for example.
Hello, I wish to register a complaint.
The classic dead parrot sketch contemplates our very understanding of life and death.
No, it's not dead, it's resting.
Resting?
Yeah. Remarkable bird, the Norwegian blue. Beautiful plumage, isn't it?
The plumage don't enter into it. It's stone dead.
No, it's resting.
All right, then. If it's resting, I'll wake it up. Hello, Polly! Polly! Polly Parrot, wake up! Now that's what I call a dead parrot.
So comedians can be philosophers, but how about the other way around?
You know, it's one thing about intellectuals. They prove that you can be absolutely brilliant and have no idea what's going on.
For Philosophy Talk, I'm Zoe Cornelli.
I'm John Perry. With me is Ken Taylor.
And our guests today are Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein. They're co-authors of the best-selling book, Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar, Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes. Tom, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Thank you, Ken.
Dan, congratulations on the success of your book.
Thanks a lot. It's a big surprise to us.
Well, your book is subtitled Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes. Not just making philosophy halfway tolerable by telling a lot of jokes, but actually understanding philosophy through jokes. So Tom, I'll pick on you first. Can you give us your best case for a joke that really helps us understand something philosophical?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you the origin story. This is the joke that we first told to each other and realized this phenomenon. Danny told me this joke about a man who comes home and finds his wife in bed and in the middle of the afternoon, and he goes to the closet to hang up his coat, and standing inside the closet is his best friend Lou, who's standing there stark naked. And the guy says, "Lou, what are you doing here?" And Lou says, "Everybody's got to be somewhere."
All right, now what's the philosophical point?
Yeah. Even Tom, well, if you want to continue, or Dan, one of you tell us the philosophical point there.
Well, Danny told me the joke, and I said, well, you know, what's going on there is that the guy is giving a Hegelian answer to an existentialist question. In other words, the guy is saying, Lou, what are you doing here in this particular existential situation, naked in my closet with my wife in bed? And Lou, for reasons of his own, prefers to answer it from this very distant, abstract point of view, looking down on the universe from God's point of view, like Hegelian philosophy. And he says, everybody's got to be somewhere.
Well, that's definitely, I mean, I've never had the difference between Heidegger and Hegel explained to me better.
So this was what got you guys started. I mean,
You've got another one with a similar theme. A guy comes home and his wife's in bed with somebody else. I wanted one of you to tell us that one, the epistemological take on the same situation.
Yeah, a guy comes home and he finds his wife in bed with his best friend.
This is Dan, right?
Yeah, this is Dan talking. And his best friend suddenly sits up and he says, before you say anything, Stan, what are you going to believe, me or your eyes?
Right.
This challenges the primacy of empiricism.
Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you a question. So understanding philosophy through jokes, I'm going to get a little serious here. How deep do you think this goes? How deep of an avenue into philosophy do you think that
not,
jokes?
Not very is the short answer. Not very.
I don't know. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think they're similar in many ways. You know, as you guys were saying in the setup, they both sort of flip our world upside down and give us a little different perspective on things, sometimes a transcendent point of view. And there's something in our response to both of them that's similar, too, and that is sort of the aha experience.
Well, you know, I do need to congratulate you on your book. I was ready not to like it because it had these two attributes. It's a best-selling book, and it's not by me.
So two strikes.
Yeah. This has got to be everything. There must be something that I could bring to this that they don't have. But, you know, actually, it's a very good book. It's well-organized. The jokes are germane. They're mostly good jokes. A lot of ones that I've heard before, they're told very well, and the philosophy is good too. I mean, I learned something from it about topics that like existentialism and Heidegger and Hegel and matter of fact, practically everything. So I don't know. You've made a convert out of me.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a challenge. Suppose that some of our listeners don't know what existentialism is. Explain existentialism in sort of dry words, and then illustrate existentialism through a joke. Can you do that for me? Okay. I don't know anything about existentialism, and you're going to teach me to understand existentialism through some humor.
All right. Well, there are a whole lot of philosophers who have been labeled existentialists, and most of them disclaim the label.
Well, right.
And almost all of them say, we don't have anything in common with the rest of these guys. But if you look at it sort of from the outside, there is sort of a commonality there, and what it is, I think, is this. They're all saying that we can't look down on the world like Hegel did and talk about the grand sweep of history. All we can see is the world as it looks to us as puny, frail, finite, anxious individuals. That's all we can know. And from this point of view, we can know some things about human freedom and its limits. You know, we can know some things about dread and despair. But we can't know anything about, you know, the grand meaning of the universe.
It's presumptuous even to presume that there is a grand meaning, and it's bad faith and all that. Okay, we got that.
Okay,
I want a joke.
That's the funny one. Now let's hear the dry one.
Well, I must say, in the 60s, when I happened to be doing two things, and one was studying philosophy and the other wasn't, the idea that life could be utterly meaningless was a brand new idea, and it seemed like a joke. It had that sense of being this big cosmic joke. And that seemed like a similarity between philosophy and humor.
But Dan's talking, right?
Yeah.
Dan, I'm gonna ask you for a joke in a bit after a break that illustrates this meaninglessness of life. Okay, I want you to come up with a joke. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. Today we're talking about the relationship between philosophy and humor with Tom Cathcart and Dan Klein, authors of the best-selling and very fine book Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar.
We're coming to you from the studios of OPB, and we want all of our Oregon listeners to participate in tonight's show. Got some thoughts? Share them with us. Have some good philosophical jokes? Share them with us. Got a joke that seems sort of philosophical, but you can't quite figure out why? Share it with us. Just remember, this is a family-oriented program. Give us a call, 503-452.
You are listening to a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
Or, as always, you can email us at comment@philosophytalk.org. Understanding philosophy through humor, plus your calls and emails, Oregon, when Philosophy Talk continues.
Charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Just slip on a banana peel, the world's at your feet. Make them laugh, make them laugh, make them laugh.
Is it good to joke about such deep philosophical topics as death, guilt, injustice, or the meaninglessness of life? What do you think? This is Philosophy Talk, and I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Our subject today, philosophy through humor. Share your humorous and or philosophical thoughts with us. The number is 503-452-4373.
You are hearing a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
Or email us at comment@philosophytalk.org.
Our guests are Tom Cathcart and Dan Klein, authors of Plato and A Platypus Walk Into a Bar.
Dan, you were explaining to us existentialism, and we got that pretty right, a dry explanation. Now I want a joke that delivers the existentialist punch.
Okay, well, let me just preface it by saying when I first read the existentialists, particularly Sartre and Camus, I realized that you aren't really living until you think about death all the time.
There you go.
And there are a lot of death jokes that that somehow address the fact that we live in denial of it all the time. And one of my favorites is a joke that Gilda Radner purportedly told near the end of her days. And it's about this woman who has been given 24 hours to live by her doctor. And when her husband comes home, she tells him this, and she says, make love to me tonight, please. And he says, you know, sometimes you're in the mood, sometimes you're not in the mood. I just don't feel like it. And she says, honey, it's my last night on Earth. Would you please make love to me? And he says, you know, you can't just decide these things. You got to really be into it. And she says, honey, I am begging you as my dying wish. Make love to me. And he says, it's easy for you. You don't have to get up in the morning.
That's terrible.
That's existentialist.
I've even got one that's more terrible.
Fire away.
Okay, this is actually an old Jewish joke about this couple in their 80s, and they go to the rabbi and they say they want to get divorced. And he says, what do you want to get divorced for? You've been married for 60 years, you know, why now? And the guy says, well, we wanted to earlier, but we wanted to wait until the children were dead.
Yeah, that's my joke. I told that for years. Some of these jokes you stole from me.
Tom, here's a question. Here's a question for you. Here's an observation. Seems to me humor often stretches concepts. You take a concept and you stretch it, and that's the philosophers sometimes abuse concepts, right? Because they want to reform them and transform them. You see any similarity between the philosophical abuse of concepts and the humoristic stretching of concepts?
Yeah, I actually hadn't seen that until you said that. But yeah, that is a real similarity, because the absurdity of humor really comes from that. You know, it comes from stretching the point until it's ridiculous. Now that you got me thinking about it, that's what a lot of philosophers do too. They take a point and sort of milk it maybe a little bit too much.
Well, my favorite topic is the self, and I think that's a concept where this concept really applies. There's a lot of self abuse goes on out there in philosophy, and I'm sure you have some jokes about self abuse.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're talking with Tom Cathcart and Dan Klein, the authors of Plato and a Platypus Walk Into a Bar, about the connections between philosophy and humor. We'd like you to join us at 503-452.
You are listening to a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
And we've got Reiner in Albany's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Reiner. Are you there, Reiner?
I am.
What's your comment or question?
Well, I've got a philosophical joke that I like to tell, but alas, many people don't get it. But I thought this audience might.
So yeah, at least the four of us ought to.
Give us a try, Reiner.
All righty. So Descartes walks into a cafe, sits down, and the waitress asks, "What can I get for you?" He replies, "A cup of coffee, please." She asks, "Would you like cream with that?" Descartes replies, "I think not," and disappears.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
that's a joke that requires the knowledge of Descartes, that he said, you know, "I think, therefore I am," and that he thought that thinking was his essence. So if he quit thinking, he'd disappear. I just thought I would just analyze that joke and make it totally unfunny.
Yeah.
That's a case of putting Descartes before the joke.
So, I noticed you didn't have much about Hume in your book, so you really put Descartes before de Hume, in my opinion.
I'm going to bring some seriousness here.
Good.
Now, one of the things you guys do, there are great jokes in this book. There are really great jokes in this book. But one of the things that you guys do is one of the things you're not supposed to do. You analyze the jokes. You kill the humor in a way. You tell the joke, and then you say what it means. But in a way, I guess you have to do that, right?
Well, I don't know. It's a little bit different, I think, than telling why the joke is funny. That really is deadly. But we found like this sort of, you know, adds a little layer to the analysis of the joke and makes you go, oh, yeah, well, that was going on there, too. That's not why it was funny, but that was going on there, too.
So the philosophy is not what makes the joke funny. Is that what you think? I mean, what's the connection between the philosophy and the funniness of the joke?
Well, I mean, let me have a try here. So, I mean, it seems to me a lot of philosophy. I mean, I used to have a teacher, a guy named O.K. Bousma. You probably remember him. You're of that generation. He was a Wittgensteinian, taught at the University of Nebraska, where I took a seminar. Really a great guy. This was back in the 60s. He said, philosophy consists in quickening the sense of the queer. And by queer, he meant odd, right? He thought the first step in philosophy was always to kind of step back and look at some ordinary practice and be kind of amazed. And I think that stepping back, I don't know if it's essential to humor or all humor involves it, but it seems to me that a lot of the cases that you give us are cases where the humor, you know, it makes us see something about an ordinary situation that we wouldn't have thought of, that is mm-hmm. extremely odd, extremely queer. Mm-hmm. So
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think you put it very well.
So let's see what some of our callers think. 503.
This is a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
4373.
We've got an email here from John Smeltzer, and he says, if you look up the word funny in a dictionary, does it make you laugh? Well, no. That itself is kind of funny, he thinks. And I think he's right about that. And you actually have the heterological paradox in your book, a pretty obtuse thing to bring up in a book about humor. But why don't you explain that to us and how it applies to funny? Or do you remember the heterological paradox?
No, we remember. I think this was a couple of guys named
Nelson and
yes.
and Gremlin. I think
Nelson and Gremlin. Yeah, that could be. Yeah.
They're close. That's pretty close. Who came up with this paradox? They said there are two kinds of words. There are autological words, that is, words that refer to themselves, like short. Short is a short word. Okay.
Or polysyllabic.
Polysyllabic doesn't refer to us. Oh, yes, it does.
Yeah, because the word polysyllabic is polysyllabic.
Thank you. Yes, I got confused there. and then there are the other kind of words are heterological, which are words that don't refer to themselves.
Like monosyllabic.
Yeah, right. Monosyllabic does not refer to itself because it has
long.
One syllable.
Okay.
Yeah, long or purple or, you know, most words are heterological. So his paradox was, are heterological words autological or heterological? Because if they're autological, then that would make them heterological because they'd be heterological words that are autological. So if they're therefore be heterological. Or are heterological words heterological. Well, if they were, they'd be ontological, because they'd be heterological words that were heterological.
So
this may have lost everybody, including myself.
But well, I think it's
Russell's paradox, basically.
We've taken John Smeltzer's observation that funny isn't a very funny word, and we've applied lots of terminology to it and totally destroyed the element of humor.
We've got lots of callers in the line. We've got lots of callers in the line. Ron and Camus, welcome to Philosophy Talk, Ron.
Hi.
What's your comment or question?
Well, it's a non-philosophical joke, really.
That's okay. Fine.
We'll milk it.
Maybe not.
We'll milk it.
Okay. Hitler, Pol Pot, Stalin are in a plane. They all jump out at the same time. Who lands first?
Oh, I don't know. I give up.
Mm.
Who cares?
Oh.
I don't think that's non-philosophical. I think that's kind of a
certain existential enemy there.
Sort of a no-brainer. It's just something that you just took for it and said, okay, that's the way it should be. Or...
I think that's a deeply philosophical joke, and I'll get back to you in a week or two and explain why. But our reaction to it raises a question that an emailer, Dan Saucy of Salem, says. He says, I wonder about the connection between laughter and humor. The Japanese are said to equate laughter with anxiety. Any thoughts? So is it just a cultural thing to laugh when something's funny? I wouldn't have thought so, but who knows? Any deep thoughts about that, Ken?
Or Dan or Tom? I mean, laughter is an important thing. When we laugh together, it's like crying together, laughing together. Laughter brings people together. It expresses something about, you laugh in the face of the absurd. That's an important attitude, mm-hmm. right? The absurd doesn't overwhelm you with angst. You laugh in the face of it. That's what humor does.
But maybe there's a connection between anxiety and humor and laughter. But that can be you guys' next book. Understanding anxiety through humor and philosophy.
Well, you know, there definitely is around death jokes and denial of death jokes. You know, for example, these three guys are all killed in an automobile accident, and they end up in heaven, and they run into each other, and they get to talking about what they would like people to be saying about them at their wake. And the first guy says, well, you know, I would like people to say that I was a wonderful father and family man. And the second guy says, well, you know, I hope people would say that I'm a good doctor and that I took good care of my patients. And the third guy says, I'd like to hear them say, look, he's moving.
Well, you know, Warren Buffett, who's, I think, very philosophical, but not, and it can be pretty funny, was asked what he wants on his tombstone. Which of his accomplishments is so important to him that he wants it on his tombstone? He says, what I want my tombstone to say is, gosh, he lived a long time.
Very good.
That's a very good one. Join our discussion, 503.
You are hearing a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
And Molly's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Molly.
Yeah.
What's your comment or question?
It's a joke.
Go. Okay. Tell it.
A man walks into a bar with a frog on its head. The bartender says, where'd you get that? And the frog says, I don't know. It started as a pimple on my butt.
Okay, Molly, I'm going to ask you a question. What do you think is the philosophical point of that joke?
I think it shows that reality is completely relative. It reverses the point of view.
Bingo.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Molly.
I think she's dead on. Yeah.
Let's see what David in Portland has to say. David, welcome to Philosophy Talk. What's your comment or question?
Hello, yeah.
What's your comment or question, David?
I'm remembering a book I read in college called Laughter by Henri Bergson. I think he was a French philosopher.
Absolutely.
And it was a good little book, and his point was that laughter is the perception of incongruity. So it was about, you know, looking at things that don't quite jibe or they're not the way they're supposed to be and recognizing that, and the body has the response of laughter. But he also said at the end of the sentence, accompanied by a sense of well-being.
Right.
So that if a guy slips on a banana peel and falls down, it's funny as long as there's a sense of well-being. If he falls and cracks his head open, then it's not funny, you know.
Right. He also said comedy is the mechanical firmly encrusted in the living or something like that. Thanks for the call, Dan and Tom. Do you have any? Theory of humor and why something funny and what humor
is
doing?
Well, not a comprehensive theory, but just some little observations. One is that even low humor, like somebody slipping on a banana peel,
part of what's appealing about that is it does give us this kind of transcendence. You know, we not only see that we're less than our social roles, you know, we fall on our prat when we're supposed to be dignified, but in some sense we also see that we're more than our social roles. You know, that our social roles are really fragile, but they're kind of laughable in a way, and we feel transcendent when we see through them.
Yeah. By the way, I think that the sense of well-being I get when I see somebody falling on a banana peel is that he's not me.
Yeah, so you think...
That's I get a great sense of well-being from that.
So it's not just about oneself, it's a kind of seeing oneself in relation to others and say, sucker.
Yeah, and I mean, as to his splitting his head open, it depends on who he is. You know?
Somebody had a famous definition of the difference between tragedy and comedy is tragedy... comedy is when somebody else falls in a open manhole, and tragedy is when you have a hangnail. So,
we're talking about philosophy and humor, philosophy through humor, with the authors of the book Plato and the Platypus Walk into a Bar, Tom Cathcart and Dan Klein. We'd like you to join our discussion.
This is a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
philosophytalk.org, and Dan's on the line. Dan, what's your comment? Question or joke?
My comment question, I have a comment, and which is sort of a question and one joke.
Okay, shoot.
It seems like there's a very strong universality claim that's implied when one asserts that something is funny. And you guys have been talking about that a little bit so far, but I remember that there was one person who called in which told a joke expresses relativity, that, is it a frog on a person's head or is it a person's head underneath a frog? So that's sort of also expressing the universality relation, and it seems to be really significant data, and any general theory of judgment is going to have to take account of the universality conditions of the humorous production of laughter. So I'm kind of interested what you have to say about that, and I just have a very quick joke.
Okay, very quickly.
what is a platonic form of a dinosaur?
I don't know. What's a platonic form of a dinosaur?
A thesaurus.
Dan, thanks for the question and for the joke. We're going to, Tom and Dan, we're going to take up the question a little bit after the break. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're discussing philosophy through humor with Tom Cathcart and Dan Klein, authors of Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar.
Most of us think philosophy is valuable, and we also think that humor is valuable. But what's so valuable about humor? And is it related at all to what's so valuable about philosophy? We'd like your input on this difficult question, 503-452.
You are hearing a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
We're coming to you from the studios of OPB, and we'll take more of your calls and emails, Oregon, when Philosophy Talk continues.
Do you laugh to keep from crying? Is there a philosophical idea underlying most humor? What do you think? We're hoping to hear from you, from our OPB listeners, that is, at 503-452.
You are listening to a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
I'm John Perry, and this is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Ken Taylor, and our guests are Tom Cathcart and Dan Klein, authors of the best-selling book, Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar, Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes.
Dan, you can philosophize about anything. You can joke about anything. Who cares? Let me give you a challenge here. I'll announce a philosophical principle, and you come up with a joke. The philosophical principle is propter hoc ergo.
Post hoc ergo proter.
That is, because this came after this, it was caused by it. That's a fallacy. Now, there's a fallacy. You got a joke about that fallacy?
It certainly is. And the word fallacy is well intended here for this particular joke. This is, there are lots of post hoc ergo propter hoc jokes, but this happens to be my favorite. This old guy marries a younger woman, and no matter how hard he tries, he cannot satisfy her in bed. So he goes to his rabbi and he says, tells the rabbi the problem. The rabbi says, well, you know, I've seen this problem before. What you do is you get somebody to stand next to the bed while you're making love to her and to wave a towel over you. He says it usually works better if you have the guy waving the towel as a younger man. So the older guy hires a younger man to wave the towel. He makes love to his wife again. Still, she feels absolutely nothing. He goes back to the rabbi and he says it didn't work out at all. And the rabbi says, well, sometimes we make a minor adjustment in the procedure. He says, what you do is, he says, you have the younger guy get in bed with your wife and you wave the towel. So he goes back, he puts the younger guy in bed with the wife, he waves the towel, and the wife is screaming with ecstasy at the young man in there. And all of a sudden, the older guy who's waving the towel looks down and says, schmuck, that's the way you wave a towel.
Well, yeah,
now that nails, so to speak, post hoc.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Now it's a rabbi, I guess, instead of a priest or a Mormon minister, because rabbis believe that women have a right to be sexually satisfied.
You know
is that
he thinks
right?
he thinks they make better wives that way.
Yeah. Let's see what some of our callers think. We've got Cross and Banks on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Cross, and tell us your comment, question, or joke.
Actually, I was thinking about how this is very much reminds me of Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land, where his character, which has been raised by Martians, thinks that all humor is really just an expression of a reaction to pain, that all humor is simply a reaction to pain in the human condition. And in some ways, philosophy could be said to be that way as well.
Well, that seems... You believe that? Are you saying you believe that, Cross?
I think that's true, because if you think of any single joke that you think of, it hurts somebody. There's some sort of pain involved to somebody. And so it's a reaction. It's a defense mechanism for humans to have humor, to laugh about that pain.
Dan, thanks for the call, Cross. I think you raised an interesting point. Dan, what do you think about that?
Well, I can tell you lots of jokes where there's no pain involved. These would be exceptional cases which would disprove it, I guess. Like there are jokes that have to do ultimately with the difference between essential and accidental properties, and I don't see any pain in them. Can Tom and I tell one of those jokes?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, it's a riddle. So I say, I got a riddle for you, Tom. What's green, hangs on the wall, and whistles?
Green hangs on a wall and whistles. Woo, you got me.
A herring.
A herring? A herring isn't green.
Yeah, you put some paint on it, it's green.
But a herring doesn't hang on the wall.
Put a nail through it, it's on the wall.
But a herring doesn't whistle.
Yeah, so it doesn't whistle.
I get that. Great. I love
that joke, and it really does say something about the difference between essential and accidental characteristics. But in response to the caller, I don't see any pain there, unless putting the nail through the herring caused the herring.
Here's a theory.
But I think it was a dead herring.
Here's a theory about jokes. About the nature of humor and the nature of jokes. There is no one theory that fits them all. So I think some jokes are enable us to laugh at pain. Some jokes are just riddles and paradoxes that puzzle and bedevil the mind and lead us in surprising ways. And some jokes are just, you know, puns. And so there's no real one thing, no theory that fits all jokes. But I do want to ask you another question related to a caller we had just before the break about the universality of humor. Do you think that humor is universal, or is it very culturally specific? And
I mean, Tom and I have been wondering about that, because one of the fallouts of the popularity of our book is that it's now being bought by foreign countries.
Uh huh.
And
including China, you know, a lot of non-Western languages.
China and Bulgaria just bought the rights to do the book, and. I mean, fortunately, there are no puns in the book, because puns don't give themselves over to philosophical meanings, at least in our judgment.
So it sounds like you think that there is some kind of universal humor?
No, it sounds like they're worried there isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
But mostly that we're worried that when they discover there isn't, the checks will bounce.
Yeah, that's right.
This is a pre-recorded episode of Philosophy Talk. The phone lines are closed.
Stephen on Interstate 5 is on the line. Stephen, welcome to Philosophy Talk. What's your comment, question, or joke?
Hi there.
Hi. What's your comment, question, or joke, guy?
It's a sample of heaven and hell jokes that I've always rather enjoyed, in the way they turn things on their head.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, in heaven, the cooks are the French. The police are the English. The mechanics are the Germans. The lovers are the Italians, and the Swiss make everything run on time. In hell, the cooks are the English. The police are the Germans. The French are the mechanics. The Swiss are the lovers.
That's a pretty good joke, Stephen. I hope you pulled off to tell us that joke. I don't. So here's an email that will turn us a little more serious. First, this is, I don't know who this is from, but it's from somebody. And first he gives us a joke. He says, a horse walks into a bar. The bartender asks, why the long face? But his point is, I know a lot of sick jokes come out of wars. From Vietnam, we've had dead baby jokes and paraplegic jokes. Nazi Germany gave us sick Jewish jokes. I know a few from many wars. They aren't funny, but we laugh. We share them, but we share them carefully. What's going on? How do you see that? Heavy question.
My guess is that it is the relief of anxiety. And, we can't deal with the anxiety, so we find a way to laugh about it. But, I mean, that's not a very deep response, and it's a psychological one, really, not a philosophical one.
I think part of it is breaking taboos, too. You know, Sarah Silverman gets away with a lot of racial jokes that would have been, taboo 10 years ago. But because she's sort of pushing the edge a little bit, and we sort of laugh at her naughtiness is what we're laughing at, I think.
And maybe if Don Imus had actually been funny instead of just
and good looking.
And good looking and young, maybe he'd still be with us, not that I care.
Hey, guys, let's take one more caller here. John in Portland's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, John. What's your comment, question, or joke?
A little of each.
Okay, shoot.
Well, I think what you're talking about when you're trying to dismantle the essence of humor is that a lot of humor gets down to juxtaposition. When the unexpected happens, the banana sitting on the street isn't doing anything, someone walks by, they fall. It's a sudden sort of thing. It's a juxtaposition of language and action. A joke I think that illustrates that is the classic, the Buddhist monk walks up to a hot dog vendor and asks, make me one with everything. This the change of language, the action, the juxtaposition of having a Buddhist monk even going to a hot dog cart. Mm-hmm. You know, this sort of thing. I think that's kind of the classic in so many jokes. It's not really pain is the common thing, or even the jokes that are absurd, like the herring on the wall joke. I mean, it's a juxtaposition of somebody saying to you, "I'm going to do this," and then giving you something else. That's kind of one of the main essences of jokes. But one of the things philosophically that I wanted to talk about was a lot of things of the derailing of the term existentialism and how existential has become this buzzword for absurdity. Or silly unexplainableness, or something like that. I think that existentialism was from my years in college and a number of classes thrown, burning up that liberal arts education. Existentialism was one of those notions that the preoccupation with death was really the notion that it liberated man from the concept that you really had to follow a dogma, religion, or something like that. And by the fact that death kind of negated everything, which is a tenet of Sartre, was that. That because death was going to negate everything, your chance here on Earth was your opportunity to do as much as you could do. Now, right. there generally is a recognition of a common social reality among existentialists, which means you don't just go out and start shooting up the town or kill an Arab on the beach, as in The Stranger by Camus. What you do is you kind of, most existentialists kind of gravitate to
John, John, we're going to have to move on, but I'm going to thank you for the call. You've made lots of points, but unfortunately we can't.
Let me add this about existentialism. I really like the job that Dan and Tom do on existentialism, and I don't think it's misleading at all, except that I think if a reader gets into existentialism from reading the account in the Plato and the Platypus, and then they sit down with Being in Nothingness or Being in Time or a Kierkegaard, they're going to say, how can something that seem kind of funny and connected with humor and be so utterly humorless and boring as most of the writing of these guys, with the exception of Kierkegaard, I guess, is.
Tom or Dan, give you one last comment. What do you want to say about that? That's true. Most philosophers are not nearly as funny in making their philosophical points as you guys are in explaining them. What's your last word about that?
That's because they're not as good philosophers as we are.
We remember in college, actually, that some of the best lecturers were some of the funniest guys. You know, they could turn an idea.
And sometimes it was a funny idea, and sometimes it was just turning an idea. But they had that commonality that we've been talking about all night.
Well, on that note, guys, I'm going to have to thank you a lot for joining us. It's been a great conversation.
I've enjoyed it tremendously.
We've had a great deal of fun.
Our guests have been Tom Cathcart and Dan Klein, co-authors of Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar, Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes. So, John, you're a funny guy. You're a really great wit. But what did you learn from this today?
Well, I learned a lot of good jokes, for one thing, from reading the book and listening to those guys. I don't know what I've learned, but I've been thinking. I mean, it's got me thinking about this three-way connection between anxiety, humor, and philosophy. And I wonder if the essence of jokes is one thing, the essence of laughter is another. I don't know. My head is all a spin. I keep thinking of the moron jokes that were big when I was a kid. Why did the moron jump off the Empire State Building to try out his new spring suit? What's philosophical about that?
Well, not all jokes are deeply philosophical. I don't know if that one's philosophical at all. You know what I think? I mean, I think there really is a deep point here, and we might have explored it a little bit more, that the way, right, it's not just the content, but the way the joke reveals its punchline and reveals itself with a surprising twist, and the way philosophy reveals its payoff with starting with obvious stuff and taking you to a place where you never thought you'd go. Mm-hmm. I really do think that's a deep similarity. I think a lot of those jokes show that.
And, you know, I think it's a good thing about this book is that when you read the book, you might say, well, sure. But then when you think about it, to take those jokes and see what the philosophical point was, it's like a lot of philosophy. It's obvious when you read it, but when you just had the joke, it wouldn't have been so obvious.
That's true. This is a very well done book. And one thing else I learned, that I love talking to Oregonians live. That was really a great thrill. They had lots of great comments. So we learned something about Portland.
We had a lot of good emails we didn't get to, too.
Yeah. So do you have a conundrum, a question that's bugging your brain?
Let us know about it, and we'll help you think about the issue in a philosophical manner.
Visit philosophytalk.org and hit the conundrums button.
Our cyber secretary will take your information, and maybe we can help you solve your problem.
For the final word on philosophy and humor, we turn to our resident humorist, Ian Scholes, the 60-second philosopher.
Ian Scholes, when you think about philosophy and humor, Ludwig Wittgenstein does not first come to mind. He was a broody fellow, given to bursts of self-doubt alternating with arrogance, and he was prickly, especially when it came to language usage. When an acquaintance made a remark about something being unlike the British national character, for instance, Wittgenstein wrote him, quote, "You made a remark about national character that shocked me by its primitiveness. What is the use of studying philosophy if it does not improve your thinking about the important questions of everyday life, if it does not make you more conscientious in the use of the dangerous phrases people use for their own ends," unquote. Wittgenstein was Orwell multiplied by 10. When he asked a friend, after she'd had her tonsils removed, how she was feeling, she said, "Like a dog that's been run over." Wittgenstein snapped at her, "You don't know what a dog that's been run over feels like." But he did have his own peculiar sense of humor. A student recalled, quote, "To illustrate the expressionist character of language, he suggested that we try swearing at a dog in an affectionate tone of voice. And to bring out the arbitrary nature of naming, he argued that we might christen the piece of chalk he was holding in his hand, Jack," unquote. Then there are the thought experiments in Wittgenstein's philosophical investigations, little snippets which include, "A mouse is born spontaneously of gray rags and dust. A chair vanishes repeatedly and inexplicably for a moment. Speaking and laughing cows stand upside down on a meadow. God creates for 2 minutes an area in the middle of a desert that is an exact copy of a part of England, including all the events that happen in that part of England. And, my personal favorite, a complete railway station and a length of railway tracks are found on Mars." Now, these aren't jokes as such, but they're certainly playful and joke-like on some level. Wittgenstein told a friend once, quote, "A serious and philosophical work could be written that could consist entirely of jokes," unquote. There's a famous incident with Bertrand Russell, in which Russell posited, vis-a-vis reality, that he could state with certainty that there was not a hippopotamus in the room. Wittgenstein disagreed. He said, basically, it wasn't so much that hippopotamus's presence could be proved, but his non-presence could not be proved. On a certain level, perhaps, Ludwig was having a little fun with Bertrand. Prove me wrong. Or if you prefer, prove my non-rightness. I gotta go.
Ian Scholes, the only man who can solve a philosophical problem in 60 seconds.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of Ben Manila Productions and the trustees of Leland Stanford Junior University. Copyright 2007.
Our executive producer is David Demarest.
Special thanks go to Devin Strolovich, Neil Van Leeuwen, Zoe Corneli, and Mark Stone.
Philosophy Talk is sponsored in part by Powell's City of Books.
On the web at powells.com.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from various groups at Stanford University.
Also from the Friends of Philosophy Talk and the members of KALW Local Public Radio San Francisco, where our program originates.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
The conversation continues on our website, www.philosophytalk.org. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.